Reading from Bhagavad Gita. This is a very famous book of the Vedas. It's called The Song of God in translation, for those who don't know it. And it was spoken directly by Sri Krishna himself 5,000 years ago. So we are reading from the 18th chapter, which is called the Perfection of Renunciation. Is it text number 55? Is the yeah, 18th chapter and verse 55. It's the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita. 54? Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, so this is a very famous chapter of Bhagavad Gita, very famous verse. So I'll recite the Sanskrit. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samah Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Bhuta Prasanatma. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samah Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Please recite. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samah Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samah Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakankshati Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Someone else would like to recite? Yeah, word by word translation. Brahma Bhutaha, being one with the Absolute. Prasanatma, fully joyful. Na, never. Shochati, laments. Na, never. Kankshati, desires. Samaha, equal disposed. Sarveshu, to all. Bhuteshu, living entities. Madbhaktim, my devotional service. Labhate, gains. Param, transcendental. Translation purport by His Divine Grace S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Purport. To the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Supreme, is the last word. But for the personalist, or pure devotee, one has to go still further to become engaged in pure devotional service. This means that one who is engaged in pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord is already in a state of liberation called Brahma-Bhuta. Oneness with the Absolute. Without being one with the Supreme, the Absolute, one cannot render service unto Him. In the Absolute conception, There is no difference between the served and the servitor, yet the distinction is there in the higher spiritual sense. In the material concept of life, when one works for sense gratification, there is misery, but in the absolute world, when one is engaged in pure devotional service, there is no misery. The devotee in Krishna consciousness is nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity who is engaged in God's service and Krishna consciousness becomes also full in himself, just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, his nature always joyful. He doesn't lament for any material loss or aspire for gain. Because he is full in the service of the Lord, he has no desire for material enjoyment. Because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and therefore eternally a servant, he doesn't see in the material world someone as higher and therefore as lower. And someone as lower, higher and lower position are ephemeral. And the devotee has nothing to do with ephemeral appearances or disappearances. For him, stone and gold are of equal value. This is the Brahma Bhuta stage, and this stage is attained very easily by the pure devotee. In that stage of existence, the idea of becoming one with the Supreme Brahman, annihilating one's individuality, becomes hellish. The idea of attaining the heavenly kingdom becomes phantasmagoria, and the senses are like serpents whose poison teeth are broken. As there is no fear of a serpent with broken teeth, there is no fear from the senses when they are automatically controlled. The world is miserable for the material infected person, but for a devotee, the entire world is as good as Vaikuntha or the spiritual sky. The highest personality in this material universe is no more significant than an ant for a devotee. Such a stage can be achieved by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, who preached pure devotional service in this age. Translation: one who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Andeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sinubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yes, for those who do not know this book, Bhagavad Gita, I'll speak a little bit about the history. So, 5,000 years ago, there was a great battle called the Battle of Kurukshetra. And this is all described in the Mahabharata. Mahabharata is the greatest literary work of the humanity. Originally, it's written 400,000 verses. Present edition has 100,000 verses. So Mahabharata described there was a war between the cousins. One side was called the Pandavas. The other side was called the Kurus. So basically, the Pandavas, they got stolen their kingdom by their cousin brothers, by the Kurus. And they wanted it back because they were kings, so they had to rule. So they had to fight for the kingdom. So this war is like it's one of the biggest wars in the history of the humanity, actually. And this book, it was spoken just before the battle began, actually. Everything was prepared. As all the armies are prepared to fight, everyone is ready. They are formed in the military phalanx. And then what happens is Arjuna is a person on this picture. He was on the Pandava side. He actually wanted to see who is on the other side, so he asked Krishna. Krishna was playing a role as of his friend on the, as a charioteer. So he asked him to drive the chariot in the middle of the armies. So they went in the middle of the armies. And then Arjuna, he could see on the other side that actually he got many friends, many family members. He got his grandfather was there, his uncle, his very good friend. And what happened, he became overwhelmed. So he wanted to actually commit a suicide at one point. And then Krishna had to convince him that this fight is the best thing for him to do. So this Bhagavad Gita, the philosophy of this book, was spoken by Sri Krishna. So Sri Krishna is considered by the Vedic literatures as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam is described in the Bhagavad Purana, which is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can see there is many personalities in this world. Some are big, some are smaller. But there is no such a personality that can claim that everything belongs to him. Like there is many rich people in this world, they have a lot of money, but they cannot claim that all the money belongs to them. But there's such a person who can claim that everything belongs to him, that's Krishna. So that's what the word Krishna means. What Krishna means, that is the most opulent person, the most powerful person, the most knowledgeable person, the most beautiful person, the strongest person, and the most renowned person. So these are the six qualities. They are called as a bhaga. And one who possesses these qualities is called the bhagavan. So Krishna's the bhagavan svam means that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he possesses all these qualities, that's why he's all attractive. Like we can see, if a rich person comes to the country, everybody becomes attracted to him because he's a lot of money. Or a person is very powerful, like Arnold Schwarzenegger comes to Belgium, then people get attracted, they want to see him. He's very powerful. Or someone is very famous, so immediately so many people come to see that person. So we can see that someone who possesses these qualities naturally is attractive. So these qualities of richness, of beauty, physical beauty, knowledge, strength, renunciation, and the famous, this is all potency of God, actually. So we are actually attracted to God, but we think we are attracted to the material energy, basically. So what attracts us in this world is the God's potency. And this book was spoken directly by God, by Sri Krishna himself, for the benefit of the humanity. And it's meant to solve all the material problems that we have. Yeah, so for those who are not familiar with this philosophy, Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna, he starts explaining it from the very beginning, from the most basic wisdom about the soul. Bhagavad Gita 2.12 says, Natvam jatunasam natvam neme janadi paha. He explains that actually, this material body is temporary, and the soul is eternal. It doesn't die when the body is finished. It's just the soul is just changing the bodies from boyhood to young, old age till death. And after that, the soul accepts another body as we accept another clothes. So basically, this material body, this is made of five material elements, the five gross material elements and three subtle elements. So this is the earth, water, fire, air, and ether. That's the gross body. Then there is the subtle body. The subtle body, or etherical body, it's made of mind, intelligence, and ego. So This gross body and the subtle body, those are the coverings of the soul. And the soul is actually spiritual, it's not material. So it has the opposite qualities of the material. It's eternal, it's full of bliss and full of knowledge. Like someone may doubt, like the modern scientists, they say that the life actually comes from matter. They say it's made out of chemicals. And the person who brought this theory, he actually got a Nobel Prize for it. That the life comes from chemicals. So there was a big conference in 1950s or 60s. And then someone asked this person a question that if I supply you all the chemicals, can you actually create life? And this person, he said, no. I cannot do that. So what is the use of this theory? Because science is based on experiment. So if they can't prove it by experiment that the life comes from chemicals, they shouldn't claim it, basically. But Krishna explains that actually the life is eternal and life comes only from life. So Krishna explains that Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Matak Sarvam Pravartate. He says that everything comes from Him. So He's the supreme life, and all the souls, they got expanded from Him. So they are the minute life. So basically, this body is just like a machine. Yantra Rudhani Maya. Krishna says that this body is working and according to the laws of material nature, but the soul is beyond this material body. And it is floating in the heart and the life airs. There's the five kinds of life airs, and the soul is engaged in this body, in the material body, and floating in the life airs. So once the body is not usable anymore, then the soul leaves the body and goes to another body according to karma or activities. So here in this verse, that actually Krishna Himself explains that we can only understand Him, that if we actually perform pure devotional service, then we can realize that we are actually not this body, we are a spirit soul, and we actually stop our material desires. So in other words, we are not, we do not lament, or we are not overwhelmed by the material miseries of life. So if someone understands that I'm not this body, I'm Brahmasmi, that I'm a spirit soul, then for him there is actually no problem in this world. You can see all the problems that we have, it's all just connected to this material body. There's the four kinds of miseries. There's a birth, old age, disease and death. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi. And there is also three kinds of material miseries. They're called the three klesha, which is adi atmika, adi bhautika, and adi daivika. Yeah, adi atmika, adi bhautika, adi daivika. So adi atmika means the misery that our mind, our body causes to us. Like for example, someone gets sick because it's very painful. We get a flu, we have a pain in bones and joints. So it's very painful. So it's called the adhyatmik. Or if someone dies, our family or friend, we feel so much anxiety. So that's also the adhyatmik. And it's caused by the mind. Then there's the adhibhautik, which means the misery that actually other living entities, they cause to us. Like you can see, now at this moment there is like a riot in England. I don't know if you listen to the news. So people are actually robbing each other. They're burning their houses, their cars, their shops. So they're causing pain to other living beings. So that's called the adhibhautik. And then there is adhidaivik. Adhidaivik means there's the misery that actually the higher nature caused to us. Like, for example, Belgium, there is
practical. There's no summer. You know, there's always rain and cold and it's wet. And always you have a running nose, cold. You know, you can't do your daily duties properly because it always rain. And people they just get used to it. They don't care. They just walk without umbrella and it's raining. They don't mind, you know, because they got used to it. I can see, like, in India, there is a lot of sun, basically. But too much sun, again, it's a misery. So on one side here, people, they want to go to tropical countries to enjoy a little bit sun, to get some nice color on their skin. And then the people in India, when it's too hot in the summer, they think, oh, it's not in such a nice country in England. It's not so much sun there. They want to go there. So they say the grass is greener always on the other side. So you can see that this is the Admidaivik. This is the misery that actually the higher nature is causing us. Yeah. So someone who is actually realized, he knows and he's realized that actually he's not his body as a spirit soul. He doesn't have these problems. Actually, so this is actually a very practical knowledge. This is like the best self-help book. Like nowadays, there is many famous self-help books. You know, you read it and then you actually apply it, and then you become successful. But we can see only those people who write these books, they are successful by selling these books. Those who read them, they are not successful. They just read them and makes them feel better. But this is the real self-help book. This actually book can solve all your problems. And it's very practical. Even if you don't practice spiritual life regularly, even if you just read Bhagavad Gita for 1 hour, you will feel like a big stone has fallen from your heart. Actually, all the anxiety is gone. Why is it? Because this is a spiritual wisdom. So nature, it purifies the heart, it purifies the consciousness, and it makes us realize that this body has a temporary nature, and the soul actually is eternal, and it doesn't die when the body dies. And the conclusion actually of this philosophy or this book is that the soul of the nature is to love God, to love Krishna. So we can only understand God or Krishna that if He reveals Himself to us. So it is it's practically speaking, it's impossible if we try to realize God by our own endeavor. If we try to analyze the world, we will not be able to find God in it. Because our intelligence is very small and God is unlimited. So we cannot grasp Him with our small intelligence. So we can only understand Him if He Himself reveals to us. So this revelation comes in the form of the scriptures, the Vedas. The Veda means wisdom. So this Bhagavad Gita is called also the Gita Upanishad. Upanishads, we know, they give the conclusion of the Vedas. And this Gita Upanishad gives the conclusion of all the Vedic literatures. That's why it's one of the most important books, and all the basic, all the philosophy and the most confidential knowledge is actually explained here. So if you just study this book, we actually be able to grasp what is God, what is the soul, what is this material world, what is the time, and what are the activities, the karma. So for this, then the devotional service means that we practice a spiritual life and we want to love God, basically. So it's our desire. That's what we are trying to achieve. That's the conclusion of this book. That the nature of the soul is to love God. Basically, it says, Jivar Svarupa Krishna Ranitya Das, that the soul, being eternal, is eternally as a servant. You can see everyone is a servant in this world. Everyone serves somebody. You can see the mother serves the child, the father serves the son, husband serves the wife, Everybody is a servant, basically. Even the president of America, when he comes to his office, he says that he's the servant of the public. Everybody is a servant. Person goes on the street with the dog, has to wait while the dog passes urine or whatever. So he's basically serving the dog. So everybody is a servant. This is the nature. This is what dharma means. Dharma means it's a constitutional nature of things. Like, for example, dharma of sugar is to be sweet. Of dharma of chili is to be hot. So similarly, dharma, or the nature of the soul, is to be a servant of God. And there's the two activities of the soul. The first one is thinking. Is always thinking. The soul is always active. We cannot stop the activity of the soul. Even while being asleep, we always have dreams. There's always some activity. So that's one. And the other one is loving. So to love is the nature of the soul. So ultimately, the object of our love, the goal, the prayojana, that is God, basically. And that's when the soul is fully satisfied, when the soul achieves that love. Because the soul is a part and parcel of God, and should be connected with God. That's what the yoga means. The word yoga, it doesn't mean a physical exercise. The word yoga means to connect the self with the Supreme. In other words, the soul with God. And the bhakti yoga, that's what this verse is explaining, is actually connecting the soul with God through a devotional service or through love. So when the soul is connected with God, then the soul is fully satisfied, and the example is given of the tree that has many branches. Like we can see in India, there's this banyan trees. There's a huge trees. They grow for many, many hundreds and thousands of years, and their roots are actually they're growing from the branches down to the ground. So basically, you don't see where is the beginning of the, or the end of the tree. And if you water the roots of the tree, then all the branches get the nourishment. You can't get the nourishment if you simply just pour the water on the leaves. It doesn't work like that. So the tree eats or drinks through its roots, because the tree is also a living being. So basically, when you water the roots of the tree, then all the branches get the nourishment. So similarly, if you serve God or the Supreme, then all his parts and parcels, they got nourishment. They feel satisfied. Like we can see that the hand, if the hand wants to get some nourishment, it has to pick up the food and put it in the mouth. The hand cannot eat by itself. You know, you can try. You can try to squeeze some juice, but it doesn't work. So if the hand doesn't cooperate with the body, then it doesn't get the nourishment. So it's the nature of the hand to put the food in the mouth, and then the hand feels also satisfaction because it gets the nourishment from the stomach. So similarly, the soul is actually meant to serve God. So when the soul serves the God, then basically gets all the nourishment. And Krishna provides for all living beings everything we need. That's why it's called Bhuta Brit. Means he supplies all the living entities with all their necessities of life, with the food, shelter, with water, whatever they require. So we do not have to worry about the maintenance. You can see that there's a big elephant in the rainforest. He doesn't have to go to work to get his food. He eats so much vegetables and fruits, like 50 kilos a day or whatever. But he just goes to the forest and all the food is there for him. And there's thousands of elephants like that. Used to be more, but they hunted them down, so it's only not many left. But still they get all their food and they don't have to work hard for it. Similarly, we don't have to worry that we'll not be maintained in this world. If we just surrender to Krishna, if we just serve God, then all our maintenance will be taken care of by Krishna himself. And that's the beauty of this process. This process of Krishna consciousness, this is a process that is actually meant to awake that natural consciousness in the soul. That consciousness is called the Krishna consciousness. And by doing that, the soul gets all the nourishment and all the maintenance. So thank you very much for listening. And if you have any questions or you want to make some comment, yes, Prabhu? Yeah, thank you for the comment. Yeah, Dr. Emmy. Yeah, thank you very much. So, is there any question or some other question or like a comment? You can feel free to ask anything you want. Don't worry, you can ask, it's no problem. It's open, you can ask anything. Yeah, so the question is that I spoke about the qualities of Krishna that is the most attractive, but still Arjuna was actually attracted to his family. So how's that when they're together on the battlefield? Yeah, so basically it's a very good question. So I explained already that this body works according to the three modes of material nature. The Rajaguna, Tamaguna, and Sattvaguna. So basically, these are the modes of the nature, they are always working. So, for the generations to go on and the married life, the family life is required. So it's a natural thing. But the soul shouldn't be attached to that conception and identify with the body. So we can see that Arjuna is actually a pure devotee, and he knew very well that he's a servant of God, but he was performing his duties. It's called karmani vadhikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. So Krishna explains that perform your duties, but do not be attached to the results of your activities, because everything belongs to God. So Arjuna was just performing his duties in the family life, and that attraction is there, because without attraction, this is the Pradyumna aspect of God, that's basically its attraction, then there is no progeny, there is no attraction from the man and woman to go on so that for the next generations. So that's natural in this world, there's nothing unnatural with that. But we can see also that if we look more deeper and we analyze that situation, we see that attraction, that's called prayojana, that attraction is actually in the intelligence, and that is controlled by Pradyumna. Pradyumna is a aspect of God, Krishna. So basically, that Arjuna, he knew that he's attracted to his family members, but that attraction, it's also God. It's also Krishna. It's an aspect of Krishna. So someone who is Krishna conscious, someone who is a pure devotee of God, of Krishna, can see Krishna everywhere. Even in his family members, can see that these are all servants of God, and my duty is to maintain them, to protect them. And there's natural attraction, and he shows affection. But there should be the aspect of Naishkarmya. Naishkarmya means, as Krishna explained many times during the Bhagavad Gita, that, as I explained it, you do your duties, you show the affection for your family, for your friends, and you perfectly take care of them. But you should understand that you are actually not this body. So it's just the body is attracted, the conditioned natures of the man and woman, they are attracted together. But the soul has nothing to do with this material body. So that natural element of detachment should be there. So you can see that Arjuna is perfectly performing his duties as a father, as a husband, as a son towards his family, but he's not attached to it. So that's what is important from the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, that you actually perform your duties with knowledge, with detachment, and in order to please Krishna. So that's called the Buddhi Yoga. So that's what Krishna explained we should do in our life. And it doesn't matter if you're a monk, or you're a family man, or you're renounced or retired, or you work in the Brussels or whatever. It doesn't matter, you know. You do your duties properly, but you should understand that you're different from this body. So you're not this field, this kshetra. This body is called the kshetra. The one who knows this body is called the kshetragna, means the knower of the field. So you should understand that you are the soul. So that's the knowledge part. Then you have the detachment. So basically then you understand you have nothing to do with it. You just perform your duty. So there's a detachment, and you do it to please Krishna, to please God. So that's the bhakti element. So that's the prominent element. So it's all done to please Krishna, basically. And that's what dharma means, actually. So dharma means you have affection for your family. Someone doesn't have affection for his family, that's called adharma, because it goes against the nature of the things, you see. So we can see that the Pandavas, they are perfectly dharmic. They know what is the nature of the world, so they perform their duties properly. Is it enough? Like an answer. Yes? Yeah, very good question. The question is that there is a Jesus Christ, and there is a Christ as a God, and then there is Krishna, that how they are related. So basically, the word Christ, if you look in the etymology or the origin of that word, you go to Greek language where it means the Christos. Christos, and in India and some different provinces, they pronounce Krishna as Krishna. So actually, the word Christos is just a different version of the name Krishna. So it basically means the same person, the same God. And everything is connected. So we can see also Jesus Christ, there's a records that he was in India for some time. There, in the Bible, they're missing some few years of his life are missing. So there was a researcher, Russian researcher, he found records in different temples where Jesus was studying. So basically Jesus, he went to India to study, then he came back and started to preach to the Jews and fishermen people and Israel. So there's a direct connection between Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. So basically, he is a servant of God, is the representative of God, and God means Christ or Krishna. So it's just the same name in a different language. Like in Belgium, you have a name for rose. I don't know the word. You probably know it. But in English it's rose. In my language it's called ruja. But it's the same flower, basically. It's the same flower. You call it in different names, it doesn't matter. If you mean it's the same flower. So that's how they're connected. Yes? Yeah. He's both, actually. He's both. He's the energy, at the same time, is the person from whom the energy comes. Because, like, for example, yourself, you have an aura around your body. This aura means the light. There's a whole process when the different elements of the body, they get transformed into the light, and that emits through the skin from the body, so that's called the aura. So that's your energy, basically. Or when you breathe out, or the air comes out of your mouth, that's the energy of your body. Or you go, you eat food, gets transformed into the energy, then it creates heat. So this all the energies of the body. So you can see the energy comes from the energetic. So it's the energy is always attached to the energetic. Like this electricity, it's connected through the cables down to the electricity house, the powerhouse, and the powerhouse is the source of the energy. So the energy has the source in the energetic. Similarly, the energy of God, everything is the energy of God around us, it's called the Brahman. It's the source is actually the personality, the supreme personality of God. He's the source of that energy. So you have both, you have the energy and the energetic. So God basically, as Bhagavad Gita explains, that has three kinds of understandings. The lowest understanding is called the Brahman, which means the impersonal aspect. That's what the energy means. And then you have the Paramatma aspect, which is the God's localized aspect pervading the whole world. It's present in every atom, in the heart of every living being. And then you have the Bhagavan. So Bhagavan means the person from whom everything emanates. So all the energy comes from him, like the sunlight comes from the sun. Is that clear? Yes. Is there anything else? Otherwise, I'll have to finish. Yes? Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Samyutta Bhaktavarinda ki jai, Gaura Premanande, Hari Gaur. Thank you. Yeah, I know. I'll do everything. I'm your servant. So we'll continue with the bhajans. Bhajan means this is a devotional song that is meant to please God, please Krishna. So similarly, we try to awake that love and share it with others. That's what the bhajan means. So please stay if you can, and then they will open the altar. Is it 8:50? Yeah.